Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In an era of financial debacle, venture capital may still have a decent reputation, but private equity, the very words, can conjure up images of sharp deals that pile on debt, kill jobs, and gut good business. It's a long way from the idealistic pioneer days of America's risk capital industry. My guest today, Peter Brook, was there at the beginning, a creator of the business, a man on a mission. Now he's looking at what it's become and what it still could be. This hour, On Point risk capital pioneer Peter Brook on where American investment went wrong and how to set it right again. You can join the conversation. Do you want new regulation thrown over this world of private equity, the buyout kings? How far would you, should we, go? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now in the studio is Peter Brook, chairman of Advent International, a global private equity firm. Starting in the 1950s, he helped create America's venture capital, then private equity, industries. In recent years, he's spoken critically of pay practices and investment patterns in the private equity realm. His new book, a memoir and a meditation about where we're headed, is called A Vision for Venture Capital, Realizing the Promise of Venture Capital and Private Equity. Peter Brook, welcome back to On Point. It's great to have you. Thanks very much for being here.
Well, thank you, Tom. I'm delighted to be here.
So you really were there kind of at the beginning of this. I mean, I know there are merchant banking roots in old Europe and all the rest, but you were there when this was really getting off the ground. You've been called the Johnny Appleseed of private equity, right in the foreword of your book here. And yet, a couple of years ago, the first time I noticed it, you began complaining about some of the trends in private equity. I know you set out with a sort of very grand vision of this sort of Marshall Plan, literally, mind as a model for what might be achieved with venture capital, private equity, risk capital, investing in companies and making them better. We'll talk about that vision. It's very important. But what's gone wrong here?
Well, Tom, I think nothing has gone wrong in the venture capital industry. I think that venture capitalists have still retained their desire to build successful technology-based companies on a global basis, and I think they've done it very, very effectively. At one point, Secretary Geithner said that is venture capital a systemic risk? Well, that was rather a silly question to ask, because venture capitalists have never utilized debt. They utilize private capital to invest in innovative companies that have been really the foundation of our job creation in this country. It's been well published that 50% of job growth has come from venture capital investing.
And so, you can rattle off the companies, Cisco and Federal Express and Microsoft, and on and on and on and on.
On and on. Mm-hmm. Now, the private equity industry is a more difficult industry to defend, but it can be defended. Those private equity managers who add value to their investments are one of the most important tools we have in re-engineering our economy.
We should say here, private equity as in coming in usually to more established firms.
More established companies, buying into them, improving management, expanding them. Certainly in the early days of private equity involvement in a firm, there might be some job reduction as the companies are rationalized and their core business is developed. But as those companies expand with the strategic help of the private equity managers, job creation occurs. So usually I think the statistic that was quoted in the World Economic Review was that after 4 years of a reduction in the force, that labor would be recreated and in effect, would be above the average in the industry as a whole.
So there are very typically layoffs that accompany a private equity investment as firms get restructured. But you're saying growth ultimately.
Growth ultimately. The statistics bears that out.
On the other hand, I mean, in your own book here, Vision for Venture Capital, I mean, you also lay out the bill of indictment. Private equity firms have come in and stripping assets, leveraging these companies to pay themselves, the private equity investors, exorbitant dividends, weakening competitive position, sometimes not adding exactly that value.
Well, I'll tell you, you have to separate those who have added value from those who have not. And that's going to be the trick in any kind of regulation in the private equity industry. The majority of private equity managers do add value. And I think any research will bear that out. I think the criticism is for those managers who layered on debt on a number of companies that they bought, destroying their competitiveness in world markets. And that's a destructive activity that somehow needs to be addressed. I would hope it could be addressed by the industry as a whole, and that they could govern their behavior. But it might lead to some regulation, and if it does lead to regulation, I just hope that regulation is not intrusive and does not stop intelligent risk-taking in rebuilding an industrial a company.
You know, the public perception of private equity has been pretty battered by the high living that we saw. Last time you were here on this show, we were talking about the famous multi-million-dollar birthday party of one of the most prominent figures in private equity that got so much attention. And then people saw the layoffs, of course, that you talk about. Companies taken down. New York Times had a big piece recently, not so long ago, on Simmons, the mattress maker that was just sort of plundered and leveraged to the hilt and left to die by the road, practically.
And there's no defense against that. There's no defense against that. That was those were inappropriate moves that destroyed a very good company. You know, the private equity in Simmons, the case, there were private equity, many rounds of private equity investing. I guess it went from one owner to another owner to another owner, and in effect, it ended up in bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. A very great company that you can't defend what was done in that case, and cases like it, and what bothers me so much is that the industry has not been able to police itself. Its bad behavior could very well lead to some form of regulation. As I say, my hope is that won't be so intrusive that it stops the good people in the private equity industry from doing their very, very effective work.
We're reading a warning just in the last couple of days. I saw this in Time magazine. There's a new book coming out called The Buyout of America, How Private Equity Will Cause the Next Great Credit Crisis. And here we've got the author, Josh Cosman. He says there's a bubble. There's a bubble of debt that's been foisted onto American companies by private equity investors that is going to blow up in our faces here. The next ugly boot to fall after the housing bubble that we've seen. Do you fear that?
Well, time will tell. There's no question that there is an enormous amount of debt that's been heaped upon companies by private equity managers. That debt is going to have to be renegotiated with the banks. I'm sure that's happening right now in many situations. But whether that will create a bubble, I don't know. I don't think anyone really knows at this stage. But there's no question that there's an overhang of debt that's been brought on by private equity managers, and that somehow has to be rationalized to avoid a crisis. Now, I know in the case of my company and the companies that I've been associated with, we've never used debt to excess. We use debt when there's free cash flow to reduce debt, but we never use debt if it would affect the ability to generate new products, new markets, and to move a company forward. And I think, as I say, I think the majority of private equity managers operate the way we do. But these are very visible cases of people who have abused the system.
When things are off the rails, when they've come off the rails, What is it? What do you think's gone wrong? I mean, you were there from the beginning. You kind of created this business. When you look down into its guts, which you can probably see with more clarity than most by far, when things go bad, what is it that's gone wrong?
Well, you know, the availability of debt, of cheap money, you know,
has an awful lot to do with low interest. Yep.
And it allowed private equity managers to pay more for their investments than they should because of the availability of this debt. You know, the key to a successful investment is the analysis of a company's ability to be changed, to be more effective, and its ability to grow. And you have to have capital, private capital, and equity capital to do that. When you heap bank indebtedness upon that, it inhibits the company to do all those things necessary to remain competitive and to be a global force.
Maybe that's a target for regulation there, some kind of ratio of debt that can be piled on.
When you start to get into rules, it ruins the flexibility of a manager to make those changes that need to be made. Mm-hmm. It's so difficult to assess risk. You know, when somebody says, "Well, we can a regulator can assess risk," we that are making investments have a difficult time in assessing risk. We spend a lot of time investigating whether the key points in a company, whether they're risky or not, and we try to identify those risks and guard against them. But when we get into the company as an investor, many more risks. We find many more risks than we saw at the beginning that need to be dealt with, and we need the freedom to be able to deal with those.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Peter Brook, one of the grand old men of risk capital finance in America, about what's gone wrong with his arena of finance and how to fix it. This is a man who was there from the very beginning, in the earliest decades of venture capital, private equity, saw it as a way to, a force for economic development and positive social change from the very get-go. In recent years, we've seen some tough versions of it with some tough consequences. Peter Brook's new book, it's a memoir and a meditation on this realm, is A Vision for Venture Capital. He's with me in the studio. We're going to hear some other voices in this hour as well on the regulatory front and the global front. Let's hear from our listeners, Peter Brook, if we may. Nancy in Framingham, Massachusetts. Nancy, you're on the air with Peter Brook.
Yes, I'd like to say, as a child growing up during the 50s, whatever happened to good old-fashioned American capitalism, whatever happened to the Capitalist Manifesto, which was published in the late 1950s, whatever happened to buying common stock in a reputable company, like, for example, American Motors Corporation, which my father did in 1957 during a recession and tripled his money. And whatever, and talking about risk and cap and debt and things like that, he never took on any debt. He paid off his credit cards in full every month. I believe that this nation started its decline 50 years ago with the attitude of fly now, pay later, the attitude of major credit cards like Diner's Card.
But Nancy, it sounds as though, if I may, Nancy, that you have the perspective that would welcome investment.
Postage stamps went up to 4 cents from 3 cents. That was the beginning of the end. And also 50 years ago, we became involved in Indochina. And the song from Motown Money was released. That's what I want.
It's all about want. Nancy, thank you very much for calling. All right, Peter Brook, there's a freestyle 50-year critique. That's got to be a little bit painful because we go back 50 years. I'm reading here in your book you were about 50 years ago listening to no less than General George Marshall, or at that point Secretary of State, I guess, outline his Marshall Plan for the reconstruction of Europe. You cite that as your inspiration to get into risk capital, venture capital, private equity, to build an economy here in this country and eventually around the world. That's mission-driven, not greed-driven, not just what I want.
Well, I think we were probably a different generation back there, Tom. You know, we were Depression babies in a way, coming out of the Depression. We were thinking of building things. We were thinking that, my feeling about the Marshall Plan and about what I would do in venture capital would be to build things. It was the idea of using venture capital. I had the idea of using venture capital as an economic development tool to first help in the building of Massachusetts and then throughout the world. I was driven with that idea. I didn't think of it. None of the pioneers thought of making a lot of money in this industry because it wasn't an industry at that time. We were excited about starting new things and making things grow. And we felt if we had any chance of succeeding and did succeed, then we would share in that success. But that was us back then. I think the newer entrants, the newer generation that has come into the industry, has thought of it as a way to make money first, and they put themselves and their desire to make money ahead of making a contribution. And you know, unless we get back to the roots of the venture capital, the idea, the philosophy of the beginning, I don't think it's going to be the force it was in the past, and that's what frightens me the most.
Because you see it as a critical engine for economic development, for prosperity.
And I think building institutions are an important thing, and institutional loyalty is an important thing. And those who are running companies have to create the sense that they have a mission. They have a mission to accomplish, and that all the people in the institution will profit if that mission is achieved. And I think if managers do that, they can build institutional loyalty where success of the company comes before money in the pocket of the individual president or top management.
Now, if you've got a culture that, if you have a culture that really promotes exactly that view, then maybe you don't need regulation. But we clearly, as you say yourself, if you point out, we do not have that culture. We've seen enormous skimming off the top here before the work's really done in fees and so on in private equity. So in the absence of that culture, what's to be done?
Well, you know, I don't think we've lost that culture completely. I do think it's easy to generalize in this business on. And a lot of the generalization has been because of those who have abused it. And I believe that they're in a minority. They don't speak for the industry as a whole. But talking about building a culture, you know, building the culture within a company is a very, very difficult thing. And in an age where people, you know, are aggressive about what they want to get paid. Mm-hmm. But it can be done. But the manager has to lay out his objectives, the objectives for the company. He has to ensure that people buy into that objective as key management people, and that's transmitted to the workforce as a whole. If that's done in a constructive way, institutions can be built and survive. And I think that the job of all of us who have been around for a long period of time is to remind people, you know, of their roots and what they have to do if they're going to build an institution.
Let's get a call right here from Dave in Lexington, Massachusetts. Dave, you're on the air with Peter Brook.
Yes, I wanted to just comment about the how venture capitalists are, in fact, looked at. I mean, to many people, venture capitalists are still the heroes in the American economy. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who fund the innovation. They're the ones who fund the companies that make the jobs in America. And, you know, ultimately it's not stimulus packages that create jobs. It's people starting companies who hire the workers and build the factories. And those are primarily funded by venture capitalists.
Absolutely. And we hear in your comment, Peter, the reservoir of respect and admiration for exactly that work, the kind of work that Peter Brook launched.
Well, would you continue with those comments,
Dave?
Well, Dave,
an
would you continue? I don't think you were through there.
Well, we work with a number of companies who have very, very innovative ideas, and they look to both angel investors, venture capitalists, and ultimately private equity to create those businesses. And it upsets me when I hear in the news about, you know, looking at venture capitalists as villains, as, you know, people who are taking, you know, taking money and going off and I'm trying to think of the word that you used, the extravagance and the asset stripping.
Well, I think there are distinctions to be made here. As Peter Brook says, private equity has really taken more of that rap, and certainly not all of it, but certainly enough of it that reputation has been problematic. Venture capital, you can hear there that kind of admiration for it. Let me get one more call right here, if I may. Ernie in Durham, Connecticut. Ernie, what do you say? Venture capital, private equity, what's your sense?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'd like to come to you from the perspective of having serviced industrial companies here in the Northeast since 1982. You know, I've got a current database of 2,900 companies over 20-some-odd years, and I have seen dozens and dozens of primarily machine-building companies that were bought out by insurance companies, bought out by private equity groups. And in almost every single case, okay, these companies have been decimated. Typically, these companies are run by engineering-type people. The first thing that happens is they are now run by financial people that do not understand the technology. They start to lose their competitive edge. I have seen, and I'm talking, my perspective is from small to mid-sized companies.
Is this work that gets sent overseas ultimately then, Ernie, or what's your experience?
What happens is the overseas manufacturers that have the ability to invest in R&D tend to grab more and more market share every year, which accelerates the downward cycle.
Peter Brooks, Ernie, thank you for that sort of first-hand report. Here's two perspectives. One sees heroism in venture capital. The other, working with American industrial firms for some decades there, and sees a record of these firms, you know, being vested in by private equity, and more in the gutted vein.
I'll tell you, there is no, as I said before, there is no defense. For those private equity managers that do what you say they've done. That destroys our competitive base. That weakens the country industrially. And in effect, if all the private equity managers were that way, I think you could introduce some regulation that would control their behavior, because in effect they haven't been able to control their behavior themselves. But I sympathize with you. And it really hurts a private equity manager who has done a constructive job in building companies. I want the public to understand that there are people in the private equity industry that have done a constructive job at restructuring companies and managing them more efficiently. I wish their story could be told adequately, not those who have done so much harm to the system.
Peter Brook tells a lot of that story in his book, A Vision for Venture Capital. Regulation for at least some of this industry appears to be on the table now in Washington. Peter, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from Boulder, Colorado, Victor Fleischer. He's a professor at the University of Colorado, Boulder, expert in tax law, private investment. He supports private equity firms registering with the SEC. That would be new, and subjecting themselves to more government oversight. Professor Fleischer, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You no doubt know Peter Brook's history in this industry. You hear his trepidation about flexibility being limited by regulation. On the other hand, the country's seen some of the pain that can emerge when things get out of control. Where do you see the right balance here, Victor Fleischer? Do we need regulation in this sector of our economy?
Well, I do. I do think we need some. I should say at the outset, I think that private equity often does add value, and I certainly don't disagree with Mr. Brook on much of what he said. In particular, private equity plays a critical role in keeping the public companies honest. So if public company managers are doing a bad job, private equity firms can come in and take over and try and turn those companies around. So I certainly don't want to see private equity, you know, regulated out of existence. But there are two things that I think are important to look at right now. And so the first is registration. especially larger private equity firms.
That is with the SEC, and that would be for the first time, right?
That's correct. So private equity firms don't have to register and report their activities to the federal government at the moment. And so a simple registration system with minimal reporting obligations would allow the regulators to take a look at what's going on and with a particular eye towards systemic risk. So as private equity firms grow, firms like Blackstone, KKR, Fortress, TPG, mm-hmm. they're engaging in activities that start to resemble what investment banks do. So they operate hedge funds in addition to private equity funds. They're sometimes taking ownership interests in banks. They're acting as counterparties in derivative transactions.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the things that got us into this financial crisis, private equity is getting involved in those.
And here's just a little bit of tape of Tim Geithner, Treasury Secretary, on exactly that front. This is in March of this year.
Leverage private investment funds with assets under management over a certain threshold should be required to register with the SEC to provide greater capacity for protecting investors and market integrity.
So there's the registration piece. And your second, Victor
Fletcher? So my second piece, and this first came up in 2007, my second piece of regulation would be to change the tax treatment of carried interest. And this is really a fairness and justice issue. So carried interest is the 20% of profits from investments which goes to the private equity fund managers. And under current law, that's often treated as long-term capital gains and taxed at a 15% rate.
In effect, their compensation taxed at a rate much lower than most Americans would pay.
That's right, and that's inconsistent with our progressive income tax system. Usually when you perform services, your compensation is taxed at ordinary income at rates up to 35-39%, I think, coming down the pipeline. But private equity fund managers, they're providing services to the funds that they're advising, and much of their pay is being taxed at 15%. The end result is that you have some of the wealthiest Americans paying tax at a 15% rate, while the rest of us are paying tax at much higher rates. And I think that's difficult to square with our general principles of a progressive income tax system.
Victor Fleischer, stand by for a moment. I hope we can keep you through the break for a couple of minutes. But Peter Brook, first on these two, registration of private equity with the SEC and a change in taxation on the compensation there.
Well, my firm is registered. It has been registered. It's always been registered. And we don't mind our reporting, our how we run our business, but we would not want a regulator who did not understand the private equity business telling us what risks are wise and what risks aren't wise. As I mentioned earlier, we have trouble when we're looking at a deal to identify all the risks.
Mm-hmm.
When we get into the company, we find that there are more risks than we thought, and
mm-hmm.
we need the flexibility to be able to move to deal with those risks. So I don't mind registering, but I don't to have somebody over my shoulder that doesn't understand the industry. I've been in the industry for how many, 50 years,
mm-hmm.
and I still don't get a good handle on risk sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I have trouble with that, but not with the reporting to the SEC. Now, the other issue is a taxation. I like to be taxed at a 15% rate, and I don't want to get in trouble with my other members of the venture capital private equity community, but I can't argue with your comment about having how do you put it, Mr. Fleischer?
Something more in line with the progressive tax of the rest of the country, perhaps?
Well, no, it was fairness. The fairness issue.
Peter Brook, stand by. We have to take a short break. We'll come right back and pick it up right there. Victor Fleischer, please stick with us in Boulder, Colorado. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about risk capital in America this hour, venture capital, private equity, the kind of fuel that has fueled a lot of startups, that has been involved in the productive restructuring of a lot of American companies and sometimes destructive high-leverage restructuring. Peter Brook was there at the beginning of the whole risk capital business in this country with Advent and TA Associates. He's out now with a new book, part memoir, part meditation on that business. It's called A Vision for Venture Capital, Realizing the Promise of Global Venture Capital and Private Equity. Some Americans will hear that and be thrilled. Others will hear it and feel some wounds that they may have taken over the years. But there's talk on the table right now about regulating here, where regulation has not really come in much weight before. Victor Fleischer is with us for a few minutes more from Boulder, Colorado. He's at the University of Colorado at Boulder and is saying, more regulation, please. Victor Fleischer, but how do we do that? Peter Brook says he's happy to register with the SEC, but he fears a bureaucrat or somebody, a regulator in Washington, trying to assess risk over his shoulder when he, after all these decades in the business, has enough trouble himself in sorting out risk. It's not an easy business, Professor Fleischer.
Well, I think he's right about that. We don't want the federal government trying to make decisions instead of private equity fund managers about how to restructure companies. What we have in mind is a disclosure-based system where, in the same kind of way that public companies have to disclose to their shareholders what's going on with the company, private equity firms would have to disclose to the government what activities they're engaging in, and then the federal government can make an assessment of whether any of those activities pose a systemic risk to the system.
But that is a risk assessment.
Well, that's right, but they're not trying to change the behavior of the managers. This is a way for the federal government to become aware of what's going on. So, you know, they may be able to make other changes in the system by loosening or tightening credit and that sort of thing.
Peter Brook, you were saying in the break there may be something in Victor Fleischer's call for getting the private equity companies focused on their core business, not necessarily owning businesses across a wide front hedge fund and all the rest.
We're only in an Advent and my other companies I've been associated with, we're only in one business. We're only in the private equity business. We were only in the venture capital business. And that was our core business and our only business. When you have managers managing multiple businesses, especially those that might conflict, I think that
and we've
that
seen
that
this should, with Blackstone, well, Carlyle,
should,
and others.
Well, I think that should be addressed. I you know, the culture of a private equity venture capital business as opposed to a hedge fund manager are entirely different. I mean, hedge funds are in for short term turns. We're in there for a 5 to 7 to 8 year period building a company. Those cultures are entirely different, and I can see and especially if private equity fellows get into the banking business that you've got the ability to cause a lot of harm. So if the regulation was driven in that direction, I hate regulation anyway, but if there has to be regulation driven in that direction might be a way to proceed.
Maybe draw some lines there. Let's get a call from Gypsum, Colorado, and Doug. Doug, you're on the air with Peter Brook and Victor Fleischer.
Yes, I just wondered about the comments regarding the complicity of the banks and the accounting firms and the lawyers in supporting the private equity. I was involved in a private equity buyout, and the numbers were such that we start with the original company, a good stable company, at $30 million in equity. The company was leveraged up, so the equity dropped to $15 million. And by the time the fees were taken out, we were down to $11 million in equity and unable to operate the business because we were so cash-starved. And the interesting thing was is that the bank supplied debt at a rate that I could not get in the market in terms of security, collateral, et cetera. They were much more highly leveraged. But in return for that, they got $1.5 million worth of fees on the day the transaction was completed, which to me really seemed like it was a conflict of interest.
We'll take that to Peter Brook. But Victor Fleischer first, is that an area where that you can address with regulation? That's a pattern that's been repeated many times.
Well, I'm not sure I'm smart enough to design a regulatory system that can get at that problem. I mean, I think the market has already corrected that. this time around.
But buyouts are coming back, we read.
Not with the same amount of leverage.
Leverage, yeah. All right.
Yeah, I mean, for a short while there, you know, deals were being leveraged, you know, 5-to-1, 8-to-1, 10-to-1.
Mm-hmm.
Debt to equity. After the crisis, we're not seeing those kinds of numbers anymore. So that's an area where, you know, it's important to find out what's going on, but I think it's probably a bad idea for a regulator to come in and try and cap the amount of leverage in the deal.
Victor Fleischer at the University of Colorado Boulder, thank you so much for being with us in this hour, Professor Fleischer.
Thank you.
Peter Brook, I mean, you how do we get at this? You've written yourself about the private equity practices that deserve scrutiny. Look at what happened with Warner Music in the U.S. or Debenhams, the department store in Britain. You know, private equity managers taking a lot of money out of those companies, loading them up with debt, slashing costs in ways that undermine long-term competitiveness. What do we do about that?
Well, that behavior, the gentleman from Colorado who went through that horrible experience of having a good company with, I think it was $30 million, mm-hmm. and equity reduced $15 million and then reduced to $11 million. You know, that killing the company. I mean, that type of behavior is I don't know how to... You can have a better word than I do, Tom, but it's irreprehensible. I just can't believe.
And the people who killed it waltzing away with very handsome fees.
And with after the fees, with mm-hmm. the equity was reduced to $11 million, mm-hmm. and the debt load on it didn't enable them to continue running the business. And when that happens, here we're getting to the nut of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
How do you... I don't think you can regulate that kind of behavior. I think that behavior has to, it's almost a moral or spiritual change that somebody has to go, an epiphany someone has to go through to have the right attitude about handling a company in which they invest.
But when there's that much potential for damage... And you don't have the sort of moral guardrails on regulation is what's traditionally come in. I agree moral suasion or ethics in the first place would be best, but if they're not there, we've seen the damage that can be done.
Well, I think that what Professor Fleischer said, market forces have corrected a lot of the problem because, in effect, debt now is not available. When a private equity manager goes into a business now, he's got to really – it's his only mm-hmm. his equity that's involved,
mm-hmm.
and he's got to price that deal appropriately and understand the management pattern that has to be created to ensure its a continuance and profitability. So market forces have taken care of a lot of the problem. But if debt becomes more available, the concern would be the concern would be that those practices that we have talked about here will occur again. But the only thing other than regulation that can cure that situation is the private sector getting a hold of itself and saying that what was done in the past was inappropriate. What has to be done in the future has to be constructive. And I know that's going to be a tough thing for people to buy into. But in effect, that's the only way that we can preserve our system without undue regulation influence from the government.
Let's take a turn for a moment. You've been very involved in taking your risk capital businesses global and seen that as a way to build productivity and prosperity in other countries as well. There's a track record. It's there. You can see it. Companies have been built around the world, and it works. On the other hand, Americans sometimes these days become concerned that American capital flows all over the place, but it may take American business leaders, thinkers, eye off the ball right here at home. Tom Friedman, the New York Times columnist, over the weekend saying, yes, America can still compete, but it's got weaknesses about suboptimal public policy and policy here in this country. And he said one of the reasons is, and quoting him, he said, we've got a U.S. business community that has become so globalized that it only comes to Washington to lobby for its own narrow interests. It rarely speaks out anymore in defense of national issues like health care, education, open markets. What do you say to that, Peter Brook?
Well, I think Tom went off the rails in that just globalization didn't cause the business leaders to go to Washington on narrow to support their narrow issues, the things they wanted. They've done that forever.
But maybe it's distracted them, he's saying here, from thinking about the bigger American national issues that aren't in their immediate interest, but health care, education, open markets, that long-term are
very important.
That
has nothing to do with globalization. I mean, the
why?
Fact that
if you're so invested in China, let's say, maybe it doesn't matter as much what's going on here.
No, a leader either has those issues at heart and in his mind, that he is going to deal with those national issues, or he's going to say, I'm only going to deal, you know, with narrow issues
immediate.
That benefit my company. And I'd say that generally, it's been the latter behavior that's applied. I think that that they should be involved. The private sector should be involved in broader issues, and not just when it affects them, but broader issues that. And issues that might, in effect, damage them but be good for the country. But you could say the same thing for our political leaders.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, goodness gracious, but thinking about narrow regional interests,
mm-hmm.
This thing about the getting votes for the health care bill, $300 million for a program in Louisiana, on a very narrow issue, important but narrow
mm-hmm.
issue.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that got a vote for health care. Well, if both politicians and business leaders have to think of this country as a whole and what's good for it, and I think business leaders are subject to a lot of criticism, but I think everybody's been complicit in this thing, and I think we ought to realize that.
I want to reach an oar out just a little further, just for a minute here. I'm afraid it's all we've got, but Tan King Boon is with us. He's a managing partner in Advent's investment activities in the Asia-Pacific region, a longtime colleague of yours. It's very late there. We appreciate him being up. Tan King Boon, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, I'm pleased to be here.
I wonder how you see, looking into the future, as risk capital takes on a more prominent role in Asia, do you think it will be given the same freedom, the same latitude it's been given in the American economy, or do you think it will be more tightly regulated there? We're seeing private equity move into China now. Will it have the same latitude and freedom, or will it be something different in its Asian expression, Mr. Tan?
Well, I think we have the fortunate situations of being following the U.S. example several years behind. This means that all along the various regulators and authorities here have been quite careful in a way registering all of us as fund managers of venture capital or private equity funds. And at the same time, I think the culture here is that we try to focus in what we do, which is to raise funds and to use these equity funds to invest into companies and let the bank do the financing and let the companies grow with that. And then how we can add value to these companies by providing as outside directors and other value added that could help them to grow. So in this manner, we actually try to be very focused, try to be just be a one focus kind of value-added investor. We don't get involved into financial engineering to try and get more leverage for the companies. In fact, the culture here has always been that the balance sheet has to be very strong. So leveraging of more than 1.5 times loans to equity is actually the norm.
Peter Brook with me here in Boston. Please stand by. But Peter Brook, in this era of global private equity, where do you see the equity flows going in the years ahead? The United States is facing some problems now. Is the capital going to end up elsewhere? Will we have the capital to build and rebuild in this country?
Is King Boone still on?
Yes, he is.
King Boone.
Yes.
How are you?
Yes, Peter. I'm fine. Thank you.
Well, Tom, I didn't mention that you were our first affiliate in Asia and have been very, very successful and profitable and a wonderful partner. And just wanted to let you know that I miss you.
Thank you.
Are you going to send them all our capital, Peter? Or will we have some left over?
On the capital issue, you know, there is plenty of capital. There is plenty of capital in this country that do what needs to be done. We're going through a cyclical changed now. There's less capital coming into the pure venture capital business because of the time horizon to exit the investment. It has been longer. So institutional investors are thinking carefully about how they allocate money to venture capital. But there is, I always contend, there is capital for good ideas. Now, there's been capital available in the past for bad ideas. A wring out of that oversupply of capital, I think, was probably required. Mm-hmm. But I don't. Capital goes to where it can be most productive, and there are many opportunities.
Will
in this
that be
country.
The United States in the next
many
century?
Many opportunities in this country. I think people are looking at China and other parts of the world because there are opportunities. Now, you know, that's not altogether bad if there's enough capital to go around, because those connections between what's being done in China and what will be done here, I think, will build to a more constructive dialogue between those in China and those in the United States. We all seem to be in an adversarial position, and there's plenty to argue about, protective tariffs being one. But I think applying capital to, and I've always felt this way, applying capital to other markets build relationships that lead to very intelligent decisions being made on a global basis about what should be done to make companies more efficient, for employment to increase, and for social benefit to happen. So I don't fear that at all.
Peter Brook, there at the beginning of the risk capital industry's birth in this country and looking right on into this century in the United States and right around the world. Tan Keng Boon with Advent in Singapore joining us today. Thank you very much for being with us, Mr. Tan. We're very grateful to you. And Peter Brook with me here in the studio, author of the new memoir and meditation, A Vision for Venture Capital. We appreciate your long view today. Thank you very much for coming in, Peter Brook.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for joining us today. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and on Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.